Welcome to this week's episode of the Executive Athletes Podcast. I want to thank everyone that has been listening and thank you for the comments and feedback. They are a tremendous help in this journey to making this podcast better and better with each episode. Once again, this is an unscripted and unedited. Bear with us if we're not professional radio personalities. So if you hear some ums, you knows, and likes, but I believe this is the best way to really get to know our guests. This week's guest is a pretty unique fellow, actually, that I met through Executive Athletes last year, local guy to Boston. His name is Ted Finn, and he's a co-founder and CEO of Uplift Ventures, which provides solutions in health and wellness as it relates to travel, business travel, and actually personal travel. And I'll let Ted go into more detail about it, but it's a pretty cool app that you guys are going to want to check out. Ted's committed to enhancing wellness and travel, like I said earlier, and with nearly 2 million lifetime air miles and years spent overseas in both Europe and Asia, he's acquired a lifetime of travel experiences and put that knowledge to use to try to change health and wellness for the traveling executive in the field. But he's also been a successful entrepreneur for over 30 years. He also founded Innovative Wellness Systems with a focus on biomechanical health and wellness. He co-founded Horizon Footwear in 2006 that has launched a number of successful projects in both Europe and Asia. And prior to that, he worked in corporate America with Nordstrom's, Macy's, and buying in the U.S. shoe scene in the 1980s. And then in the 1980s, he co-founded Am Asia International. And they were a pioneer in Asian sourcing and one of the first companies to produce high-quality comfort footwear in China. And Am Asia was acquired by other footwear companies and was then acquired by a European conglomerate back in 2004. And Ted is your consummate executive athlete professional. When he's not traveling, he lives outside of Boston. He enjoys time cycling, mountain biking, skiing, and triathlon. And Ted and I were trying to hook up the last few weeks to go for a bike ride, but summer and kids and camps and all that stuff always gets in the way. So we said, here, let's do the podcast because he's got an amazing story and something super cool. So we'll dig into that. So Ted, welcome aboard and would love to get some insight on yourself. Give us the quick 5,000 foot overview and intro of Ted Finn.
Ken, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm honored to be here. I've been listening past few weeks, your guests and are just tremendous. So many thanks for having me. 5,000 foot view would be, I was a kid who was born in Cambridge and grew up around Boston, had never traveled, and one day my dad came home and said, we are moving overseas. He was in the domestic footwear business and a low-cost, high-tech country was disrupting the industry in the early 70s. Of course, nobody you can guess what it was, but it turns out it was Italy.
Wow.
The next thing I knew, we moved to Florence, Italy, and I went to high school there. And that experience of living overseas and living in a Renaissance city in another country changed our entire family's life and trajectory.
I'm sure. What was it like to go to high school in Italy? Did they speak English at all, or were you forced to learn Italian?
I went to an American school. It had 120 students from K to 12. It was in a 500-year-old villa with gardens that Galileo had used to practice his telescope on. So it was an incredible experience. It immersed us in an entirely new world, and we learned so much from it. And we've been so fortunate and so grateful for that experience. And at the same time, we've maintained that connection to Italy all of our lives.
So you get taken out, brought to Italy, go to high school there. Where'd you go from there?
Then I came back and went to college. I went to Hobart College in upstate New York. It was not an easy transition coming back to the States after 3 years to finish high school. I was definitely a different person than when I left, but had a great, you know, great education at Hobart, made some lifelong friends, and after that ended up going to graduate school in Chicago at the University of Chicago to study international relations. And there I really received an education and also met my wife. So Chicago was an incredibly good experience, great education, and set the table for me for my entire life, in a sense, because of meeting Leslie there.
And then you got into the shoe business after school, or did you stay? How'd that work?
Ken, I wanted to be an international banker after I got out of graduate school. And it was really interesting looking back on that now, because at the time there was a debt crisis in Latin America and all the banks were laying people off. But it also turns out that international banking was probably not my personality and probably not the right career path for me. So I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And I thought about how the footwear business would provide a route to go back to Italy and be involved in Italy again. So I talked to my father, who was an executive at US Shoe, and he said, listen, I think if you want to go into footwear or any other consumer good business, you need to go work at a retail store. So I know a small regional chain in Seattle, and you should, if you really want to go this route, you should go out there and work and sell some shoes. And I said, yes. And that little regional chain was called Nordstrom.
Wow.
So that was an amazing experience. They brainwashed me for my entire life for customer service. And if it wasn't for an opportunity to go from Seattle to Asia, I probably would have stayed there and, pursued a career with them, because it was an amazing company, amazing culture, and a wonderful place to be associated with. So I'm in my mid-20s, and then I was in Seattle, I ended up in Taiwan for almost a year, and then was able to find a shoe company based in the United States called Nine West that allowed me to go back to Italy for a few years again. So I lived again in Italy for a few years and really learned Italian, because there's no substitute for going to work every day in factories and suppliers where nobody speaks English. And then eventually circled back to the States and ended up in New York working for Macy's. Macy's corporate buying, traveling to Europe every month, managing production and in-house brands in footwear in Italy and Spain. Then one day my dad picked up the phone and called me and said, hey, I have an opportunity to buy a very, very small office from US Shoe and go into business for myself. And I don't want to do it alone. Do you and Leslie, who was a financial wizard, want to join me and start MAsia International? And it was about a month after we got married. And it just come back from our honeymoon, and then all of a sudden, we became entrepreneurs, and started with a very small office overseas and no infrastructure in the States, and built that business over 17 plus years with up to 180 people involved.
Wow.
With offices in Boston, Taipei, Hong Kong, China, and operations as well in Europe. So quite a journey of footwear. At the end, I think we made shoes in 12 different countries and sold them in 25 different countries.
Now, what was it like doing business in Asia in the 80s?
It was the Wild West, because China was really just opening around 1990. Most of the production was in Taiwan and Korea. And it was only at the beginning of 90 that it started to open. So we were some of the first companies through the gate there. And it was really the Wild West, because there was no infrastructure, no highways. The supply chains were very challenging. We had a great organization based in Taiwan. And Taiwan, it turns out, was the key that unlocked the door to China, not only in footwear, but in many, many industries, and accelerated the entire economic development of China.
And so you got out of the shoe business, you sold your company, and talk to everyone about Uplift, the product that Uplift Ventures is. This is probably one of the coolest things I've seen in a while. And I think a lot of people that are part of this podcast and listeners would be very interested in what Uplift Ventures does.
Uplift is an amazing product, an amazing fork in the road for me personally and professionally. We sold our main shoe company in 04. We were doing some small projects, and I sat down with my father and I said, "Dad, you know, we've always won because we were innovators and pioneers. And we sold our big shoe company. We're selling the same shoes that we're selling 30 years ago. There's really very, very little innovation in our space. And I love doing what I'm doing, but I'm bored, and we've got to find the next opportunity." And through circumstances that just happened, partially due to a long-term illness in our family, I met my co-founder at Uplift, Dr. Charles Krebs, in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And Charles's journey and what he has been through in his life that led to the discovery that has become Uplift inspired me to take this incredible fork in the road and risk to start this company and build this product. And what this is, Charles is the leading expert in the planet for neural networks and biofeedback and acupressure. And he was living in Australia and traveling to Germany to teach neurology. And he had a problem with jet lag. Jet lag technically is desynchronosis. You're desynchronized from your time and place, and it affects, as we all know who travel, it affects all of our systems, mostly sleep, but your entire physiology. And Charles, being Charles, he decided that he would come up for a solution to develop a natural solution to resync his body clock to his new time zone, to his new place, which only Charles could do this. When he told me this story, I'm like, "Charles, really?" He's like, "Ted, yes."
That's so amazing.
Of course, I'm like, "Okay, I'm from Missouri, show me." So he gave me the solution. I traveled to Italy with my dad twice. You know, we've been traveling to Italy for 45 years. We know exactly what happens. My dad wakes up at 3 or 4 in the morning, doesn't go back to sleep, and he's like ready to fall asleep at lunch. And I'm a little bit out of it. And we used the solution twice. And it was amazing. My dad still woke up, but he went back to sleep. I felt better. And we came back from one trip. I'm like, Charles, that's really good. We're going back again in a couple of months. He goes, okay. Used it again. Then we found out that like 500 people in Australia that were friends of his were using it. And I'm like, Charles, this is great. And he's like, Ted, I need some help. I'd love to, you know, commercialize this. I'd love to start a foundation for my work. And here's a man that has dedicated his life to helping people and overcome a near tragic accident that left him basically paralyzed after a diving accident in Australia. And he was able to use his very, very unique skill sets, being a double PhD in physiology and biology, having a 3D photographic memory, and being a black belt in karate, where he could break boards and bricks. And when you know when you do that, you don't break them with your hand. You break them with chi energy. And he was able to walk out of the rehab hospital in Australia after being paralyzed in a diving accident. And nobody could explain how he did that.
That's a fascinating story. So tell us a little bit about the process. I know you don't want to spill your secret sauce, but it's acupressure, it's a combination of things, correct?
So Uplift is a mobile application where you input your itinerary so we know your time. Like, we're in Boston, and tonight we're going to get on a plane at Logan and we're going to fly to Paris. We input the itinerary. We know what our body clock time is in Boston, and we know what the time is in Paris when we arrive. We have an algorithm formula that calculates a solution based on those times. And there's over 120 different solutions. They change every half an hour, and they depend on where you come from and where you go. And then we guide you with to find two acupressure points, which you activate. These acupressure points are connected to your neural network and your energetic body clock, so that you're inputting basically a new time into your system. You know when you land in a new city and your phone adjusts for the new time zone or the new time?
Yes.
This is the human version of this.
That is amazing.
It is amazing. We have now over 500 users who have tested this and been collecting data from them. And what we do is we neutralize the jet lag. So for people who travel, you get off the plane, you know, you fly around the world, you get off the plane, you want to hit the ground running. You're either going to work or you're going on vacation or you're doing both. And desynchronosis is affecting your performance. It's messing up your digestion, your sleep, you're foggy. So you're at a disadvantage for business meetings, and your performance is diminished. Using this system, we neutralize the jet lag. You're not fighting your body clock. If you wake up in the middle of the night, it's not 9 o'clock in the morning in Boston when it's 3 o'clock in the morning in Paris, or vice versa. So we take that out of the formula so you can travel and you can enhance your performance.
Now, is it different if you're going east-west versus west-east?
The solution, if the solution, if we were to fly from Boston to Los Angeles, you would have one solution based on those times. If we were flying to London, it would be another.
Okay.
Frankfurt, a different one. Dubai, another. Hong Kong, another. Because all of these places are in different time zones and they have different travel times. So what happens when you fly out of Boston tonight is that you land in Paris, for instance, tomorrow morning at 9:30. It's 9:30 in the morning in Paris. You left Boston at 8:30 at night, but it's not 8:30 at night on your body clock. Your body clock is somewhere over the Atlantic Ocean about 2:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And that disconnect or that desynchronosis is what affects you. And based on studies from NASA and other medical studies, it takes anywhere from 12 to 24 hours for your body to naturally readjust for each hour of time change. So traveling to Europe, it's a 6-hour time change. It could take you from 3 to 6 days to fully adjust all of your physiological systems. And then when you turn around and come home, the same. So this is a game changer for international travel. I've been traveling all my life. I know the problem as good as anyone, and I always get off the plane and go to work, or I've come back and tried to participate in events. Tried to do the Dover Sherburn Triathlon, the Vermont 50. And I got to tell you, there was not a lot of gas in the tank, even 3 days after coming back from Europe.
Now, when you were launching all these businesses, were you also training as well?
Yes. Or
competing or staying active? Because a lot of people use that as an excuse to not train or stay active or to race.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a late bloomer in the... I've been active all my life. I've been a skier all my life. I've been riding my bicycle most of my life. But there was a big chunk of time in my 30s and 40s where we were just so involved with the business. I was not that active. And it's interesting. In the last dozen years, I've really become much more active, competing in endurance events. We do the Vermont 50-mile mountain bike race every year in September. I do some shorter triathlons. But it's interesting that the endurance part of it came to me really almost in my late 40s as I neared 50. And it's become a big part, an important big part of my life. And I feel that entrepreneurship is an endurance sport. And by being an athlete, by being active, that gives me the energy to do everything that I'm doing, which is a lot at this point.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer of, as you started this executive athletes world, really for that, to see who's active. Right, to get people or connect people that have really found that as a tool to be successful, both in the workplace as well as outside of the workplace.
Absolutely. And the fact that I found that for many years I was exercising and doing activities on my own, but when I got involved with a group of friends, either through work or here locally outside of Boston, that community, that those friends really inspired me to levels which I had not even considered. I mean, in the last 12 years, and I'm at the end of my 50s, I had never skied Tuckerman's Ravine until the last 10 years. I'd never competed in endurance events. I only started doing triathlons in my late 40s. And I feel just that it's been so important to my overall you know, well-being and enhanced my ability to perform at work dramatically.
No, it's huge. So, and you've been a serial entrepreneur, leader, you know, creating this company, Uplift Ventures, a master's athlete, a mentor to many. Throughout your career, what do you think makes people successful? What differentiates them from, you know, the mediocre?
There's a lot of factors that come into play, but I think that finding your passion, whatever that is, makes a huge difference, because then it's not going to work every day. It gives you that, you know, let's face it, there are so many days, you know, as an entrepreneur, never mind, you know, big corporations have their issues, but entrepreneurship is not easy. And most of us fail. And we have to learn from those failures. I've been, you know, entrepreneur for 30 years. This is my fifth venture. There have been incredible highs and there have been incredible struggles along the way. And you need that passion. You need endurance. You also need self-awareness, because there's just so much that you need. You can't do everything yourself. You need people. And you need to know where you're strong and where you're weak. So I think that I just try to keep reinforcing those lessons to myself, my team, and, you know, my peers, that, you know, let's try to be passionate about what we're doing. If we're not, let's be self-aware. Let's talk about it and let's find out why. Because things change over time too. I was very passionate about the footwear business for many years, and very grateful. I mean, Ken, I'm one of the luckiest guys that ever lived on this planet. I mean, I grew up in Boston. We live in Massachusetts. It's beautiful. It's safe. I've been fortunate to go around the world and live different places and work and experience things. And, you know, some of it's the accident of where you're born and who, you know, and who your family is. And then, you know, a lot of it is, you know, what you do with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's plenty of people born into affluent families who become disasters. And then there's plenty of people born into nothing and become super successful. So, you know, there's always that's the initial card you're dealt, but there's other 52 other cards in the deck, and what you do with them too can really dictate what you're going to do with your life.
Exactly. And it changes over time. Here I am starting, you know, Uplift Ventures. We're taking on a global problem of desynchronosis and jet lag. It affects over 1 million people a day flying around the world. And especially great for both executives and athletes. And I'm just so excited to be, like, honoring Charles, Dr. Krebs, and his work to make, you know, to share this and make the solution known to everyone who travels and who suffers. And at the same time, half of my friends are looking at me like, whoa, like, I'm thinking about retiring in 2 years or, you know, slowing down. You know, and I'm starting an entirely new path and career. And I couldn't be more excited. I couldn't be happier. I think it's totally the right thing to do. And so many people in my family live to 90 years old. What am I going to do for the next 30 years?
It's a ways away.
It's a ways away. I mean, I love riding my bike, and I do have a lot of hobbies that I love. And they sustain me and they nurture me through this journey, which has a lot of bumps in the road. A lot of bumps. So being an athlete, I think, just helps so much, because it gives you the shock absorbers to handle the rough road.
And I think it grounds you as well. I think when you're stressed and you go out for a bike ride or a hard bike ride or a hard run or something, and you come back, a lot of times either the problem you were stressed about either goes away or you've come up with a solution. I think more people, you look at Steve Jobs and what he used to do. He used to go walking all the time and do all his meetings on foot. I think purely because of the reason your head's clear and you can actually think when you're doing that stuff too.
Absolutely agree with you. And for, you know, it varies by person, but I have learned for me that I have a great passion and love for the outdoors and that I try to do all of my activities outside. And it forces me to pick the right activity for the right day. So it forces me to adopt, you know, cross-country skiing, because we can't go downhill skiing all the time. It's too far away during the winter. Trail running, mountain biking, because it's not so easy to go road riding at 5 o'clock Friday night when everybody's rushing home. And we try to pick the best activity for that moment, time, or day. And we do it outside. And I feel like when I ride my mountain bike in the woods, I'm exercising, I'm meditating, and I'm also like clearing my system of toxins because I'm breathing in all of this incredible oxygen from the forest canopy, because we're so fortunate in Massachusetts to have this incredible tree cover everywhere. And I mean, there are people in Japan that do that. There's a Shinrin Yoku, it's called forest breathing. And they walk in the forest and they do activities in the forest because they found that the quality of the oxygen and oxygenation, it reduces stress and it reduces inflammation.
Just got to get rid of those damn caterpillars right now eating all of our leaves.
Oh my God, they're terrible.
They're terrible. It's almost like back in the 80s when it was just, it's crazy. I look outside my house and I go trail running in this one section and it's like being in the middle of winter. All the leaves are gone. It's nuts. But I think that's because of the lack of rain that we've had as well. They don't get the fungus that they need to kill them off.
Yeah, they are not. They're not friendly.
They are not. So you mentioned about the highs of being an entrepreneur, but also the lows. What do you think, some of the keys to overcoming adversity when you're dealing with issues and your funding? We were talking about funding earlier, or the size of your company, or injury, or anything like that. What do you think are the keys to overcoming adversity?
I think there's a need to be committed to what you're doing and be persistent. And not with your head in the sand, because there are times in the journey where you're going to fail, or you need to fold the tent on a project because it didn't work out. And just, you need to learn from those lessons so that you don't repeat them. At the same time, you need to get through so much in business, whether big company, small company, entrepreneur, even corporate. We all have our challenges, but in entrepreneurship it's different, because when there's not, we had times in the past when there wasn't enough cash coming into the business, the owners don't get paid. You take care of your people. You pay your people, you take care of your people, and when things get better, you take care of yourself. So you have to lead by example. You have to have a great team. We had a family business, but we treated it like part family business, part multinational corporation. So we try always to be professional, but caring, and we looked out for our people as best we could. There's a lot more tools and understanding of that today than there was 20, 30, 40 years ago. But, good values, good business habits, they're essentially the same over time.
And what do they say? If you keep, if you're going through hell, keep going. That's pretty much what you're saying.
Exactly.
And believe in yourself.
You do. You do have to believe in yourself. And as entrepreneurs, we do. We invest in ourselves and or in our careers, in our corporate development. We have to do that. At the same time, though, we have to be self-aware, because if we're doing something that's not fundamentally what we're cut out to do or making us happy, then we need to, you know, we need to address that.
Nope.
Some of the statistics of people's satisfaction at work that you see are just scary. They're so low.
Right. And oh, it's like 5% or something, or 4% of people are actually satisfied in their job.
Yeah, that's really scary.
That is.
And that's, you know, we all spend so much time at work, no matter what we do. You know, we've got to make it the best that we can, and we've got to, you know, we've got to do that not only for ourselves, but for our coworkers and our communities.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a huge thing. And I think if someone could even tap that market and go from 4 to 10% or 4 to 15%, it would be, think of how the economy would shift and the GDP would shift and everything else. It's sort of crazy.
I think there's a really good awareness now of the problem, and that there are a lot of companies that are focusing now on wellness. That, you know, that wellness is more than just saving money on your insurance policy.
Mm-hmm.
That wellness enhances your company environment. That it enhances the productivity and happiness of your coworkers and your associates. And I feel that, you know, as being an athlete, that we also try to embrace that wellness. Although sometimes we take care of ourselves the least.
Right.
But, you know, that inspired me with travel, because, you know, I'm traveling all my life. I realize, you know, travel, you know, in the movies it's very glamorous. In reality, travel is not easy. Not easy at all. So very excited to be promoting wellness, performance, and travel all together with Uplift. Very excited.
No, and you actually, that's, you know, that was my next question, but you already answered it. You know, being about what role does athletics, health, or wellness play in professional success, but you had preempted that with what you had just said. I think that's the next step of actually getting people to perform well. I was just interviewing someone yesterday and talking about it, and I think you'll start seeing the Googles and the Apples and all those really start promoting more wellness. They say that they have a gym at their facility, or that they can take nap pods, or you can do this or do that. But to be honest with you, I'm sure not many people are caught dead doing any of that stuff due to the competitive nature of a few organizations.
Exactly. It's all trying to find the balance.
Yeah.
It's all about trying to find that balance. And I just find that being active sustains me, that when you try to start any new job, the amount of time and energy that you need to invest in that is immense. I love what I'm doing right now. I work literally, you know, 5 nights a week, but I always try to make time to get that workout in, to clear my head, to clear, you know, the stress. And often I do it with a group of friends here locally. So it also creates that social connection and aspect as well. And we have fun together. We pull each other to higher levels. We compete with each other, even though it's not a race.
Right.
And we cheer each other on when we reach new levels. It's you know, it's just, it's exciting to see.
Now, if you were looking to tell, or were telling a budding athlete or master's athlete or someone that's really taken, looking to take the next level in performance, both athletically and professionally, what would you tell them?
I have, I would have a mixed message depending on their goals, because I think that reaching the next level can be done with a lot of training and a lot of data. And there are a lot of systems to enhance your performance that you can follow to really improve. At the same time, if you're an athlete for life, you don't want to lose or diminish the joy or enjoyment for those activities that you do because of the methods that you're using for training. And what I mean by that is, when I started doing triathlons about 12 years ago, I started tracking everything. And there weren't a lot of tracking devices, so I had journals and, you know, I kept notes and, you know, how long I did everything. And the minute a new tracking device came out, I got it and I was consumed by it. And then one day I kind of realized that, maybe I'm losing a little bit of the joy along the way here. So I've maybe sacrificed a little bit of my performance by not tracking everything. I mean, I have my phone in my pack, but I've taken my computer off my mountain bike. I'm not looking at my apps all the time. I'm just trying to be out there and be in the moment and enjoy it, so that it's a sustainable journey. I want to be riding my bike when I'm 95 or 100 whatever. You know, won't be very fast, but
hey, you're on it, right? That's all that matters.
So it's about finding that balance. And that's spoken from someone who's become more of an athlete and an endurance athlete later in life, and trying to do it in a sustainable fashion. You know, I think it was Phil Knight said, it's not a 100-meter dash. It's, you know, it's a 10,000 meter. It's not, it's a 1,000,000 meter. You know, it's like, how many times can you ride around the planet? Mm-hmm. You know, if you can pedal enough. And it also depends on that person's, you know, goals and aspirations. But I think you got to have some balance there.
Perfect. No, and I think, you know, we're coming up here to the end, but I have a couple quick rapid fire questions for you. You know, do you follow any specific diet?
I was influenced by my years in Italy to eat in the Mediterranean style. I do eat pretty much mostly everything, but I try to do it wisely.
Perfect. And what about, what's your favorite piece of gear that you use to train with?
Last year I had to retire my 26 inch mountain bike because the frame broke for the fifth time. So I have a Trek carbon mountain bike with both 650B and 29 wheels that I can run on it. And I love that bicycle more than my last three cars.
Awesome. No, I have a 27.5 mountain bike and the thing is unbelievable. It's different.
Unreal.
Yeah.
So much fun.
It's good. And what was my last question? Oh, what was your workout today?
Let's see. This morning there was a little bit of rain early here today, so I didn't go out on the road bike and go swimming. I took a mountain bike ride through right out of my driveway up on a hill that overlooks Wachusett and Monadnock, and then through the woods. So about an hour mountain bike this morning.
Nice. No, and that's, I definitely got to get out there, and we got to go for the mountain bike ride. Oh, I think, man.
We have 50 to, we have close to 100 miles of trails here. It is unbelievable.
That's it. But anyways, no, thanks, Ted, for being part of it. It was great. And your international experiences of starting a business. And I think you're onto something here with Uplift and changing the lives of millions of people that are traveling. So nice work that you're doing. And where can anyone find you?
You can find me, of course, on LinkedIn. And then Uplift is upliftnaturally.com. on the web.
Perfect. No, and we'll have everyone check out that product, hopefully. And I want to thank you, Ted, for being part of this. And I want to thank the listeners for listening to another awesome episode here of the podcast. And if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, again, email me at ken@executiveathletes.com. And Ted, it was great to have you on.
Ken, thanks so much. I'm honored to be a part of this.
Perfect. Thank you.